Item request for public hearing, Gillnet and Spiny Dogfish Limited Fishery Access Proposals. Mr. Grist, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, sir. It's a request for public hearing. I'll try and keep this brief, but it is a bit of a complicated issue. Just a little background. Currently, there are two Gillnet licenses available for sale by the commission. One is the Gillnet license for up to 600 feet. The next one is from 600 feet up to 1,200 feet. It's available for anyone who holds a commercial fishing registration license. Last October, the commission heard comment from public, including especially watermen, about concerns about overcapitalization of the Gillnet fishery. And at that time, it was placed in December, our control date was placed, 1190-20. So that staff, along with a subcommittee of industry, could get together and talk about the Gillnet issue, if it is being overcapitalized or not, and if it is, what recommendations would come from that. Specifically, one of the concerns was spiny dogfish. As we know, spiny dogfish quotas are always an issue each year for us, and there is a possibility we will go to state-specific quotas on spiny dogfish in the near future. So there's two issues they actually address, gillnets and spiny dogfish. And this all comes also from just we saw an increase in license sales, especially for out-of-state on gillnets, dramatic increase for one state in particular. So I'm just going to get into the recommendations. The subcommittee, they did many months worth of work with staff on this, many meetings throughout the summer. And I'll just get to the heart of what they're requesting. For gillnets specifically, it's what they would call a new Class A and Class B limited entry license. A Class A would be divided into a resident and non-resident. So a Class A resident would basically be someone who could have up to 10 gillnets that are up to 1,200 feet in length. They are transferable only amongst residents. So if you're a Virginia resident and you want to transfer another, it has to be a resident. They set certain criteria for qualification. Either you had a gillnet license prior to the control date, or because we have had new entries into the fishery since the control date of end of 2005, they set some other criteria, such as you had to at least reported through mandatory reporting harvest, gillnet harvest for at least 100 days in any 1 year from 06 through 08, or documented 60 days in any 2 years. Basically looking for full-time gillnetters in this. So they set this criteria up for Class A resident, and that included already 1,488 individuals who are Virginia residents would be under this Class A limited entry system. And one of the issues was, Mr. Schick will remember, was concerns about cutting out Virginians from this. And this is including quite a bit of Virginians. But there is also a Class A non-resident using the exact same criteria that's been set up. And a Class A non-resident uses the same criteria, and there's 41 qualifiers for that. So theirs is only transferable between another non-resident. So they can't go to a resident with it. They can only go to a non-resident, but the number doesn't go up at all. It stays at 41. Then there is also a Class B. What about those who don't make the Class A? Well, then we'll have a Class B classification that's open to anyone not under Class A. They can have up to 5 nets in total that are up to 600 feet each. So it still uses the 600-foot and the 1,200-foot licenses that they currently exist. You can't have both. So if you have a Class A designation, you can also have a Class B and double up. Also, another concern was helpers in the system. We wanted to make sure they got due cause. So if you were a licensed gillnet, you have a license for a gillnet, and you served as a helper, so you weren't the primary reporter, but you were listed as a helper, you got equal credit for the 100 days or the 60-day criteria. So if you worked as a helper with somebody, that day counted for you also. And we went through all that, the helper data itself. So that was the general recommendation just for gillnet. We're still verifying some records, but the general number is 1,488 Class A resident, 41 non-resident for the Class A, and then we have that Class B designation. So that's the recommendation subcommittee just on that item. For spiny dogfish, of course, the issue is were worried about the overcapitalization of this fishery. There was concern that some of the harvest that's happened in this state is actually being transported out of state, which if reported under landing system, it'll qualify for another state. It won't go to Virginia, and if they do go to state-by-state quotas, we actually want that to be in Virginia counted. It's a very important fact that we get as much of the quotas as can. Recently, that spiny dogfish fishery in the winter has been a key component to keeping the gentlemen who need to work in the wintertime going. We're hopeful we'll have it this year if some other states don't catch it up first. They came up with two criteria to qualify to have be in the spiny dogfish fishery because they're looking for people who really were part of the spiny dogfish fishery. So either individuals who had averaged at least 60 days of harvest using a gill net from 06 through 08 and have documented at least 1 pound of spiny dogfish harvest at that time. So they worked at least 60 days with a gill net and they showed at least one time they had spiny dogfish in the net in those 3 years. We had 63 individuals who qualified through that method. Or they came up with a different one. In case you don't use gill net 60 days, but you are a spiny dogfish fisherman. So you harvested at least 10,000 pounds of spiny dogfish in any 1 year from 06 through 08. When we looked at that criteria, we had 71 individuals who made it. So when we looked at both, because some qualify through both criteria, we end up with 101 individuals who would qualify for this limited entry fishery that's being proposed by the subcommittee. And we're still verifying records in case someone else gets in. Same criteria go for helpers also. Helpers got equal share in whatever they were. If the primary harvester had you listed as a helper, you got to count what the primary harvester did. That's the recommendation of the subcommittee to go to public hearing for October.
Questions from members of the commission? Mr. Robbins.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Joe or Jack, do you all see any questions with establishing a limited access permit at the state level for a federally managed fishery that's not currently under a limited access plan? I know federally there's an amendment being scoped right now that would deal with the question of limited access, but I think some of the public comment has gone to this exact point that one way to do it would be to let the states deal with it. Do you see any?
I don't see
any bumps in that road.
I don't see any problem with that. If or when the federal government were to impose limited access on that fishery, we'd certainly have to take that into account and perhaps readjust. But I think Virginia has been a leader in terms of limiting access to its fisheries. Not only to the benefit of the resource, but the benefit to our industry. You know, I think we have an excellent limited access fishery with black sea bass that's proven very successful. If the feds were ever to implement something like that across the board, then that obviously might affect what we have here in the state, but I don't think that should stop us from doing what we think is right.
Okay, I just wanted to ask the question to make sure we've contemplated those issues.
Further comments?
I'm sorry, Scott. A point in when you went through the gill net limited entry discussion, you pointed out that there were 1,400 Virginia residents that would qualify as Class A people. And just taking those alone, and each one of them can have up to 10 nets, 1,200 feet long, so we could have 14,000.
You could, but that's, we looked at the number of nets out there and all, and we're not seeing that number of nets actually being purchased. This is actually the number of nets on the higher classification, the 600 to 1,200. So right here, we've got somewhere in the neighborhood of 1,500 nets total being purchased in the 2008 time period.
Well, then do we...
There are individuals.
Are we being a little excessive when we are allowing up to 10?
So there are individuals.
To 3, and they're still, everybody's still okay?
Well, there are individuals who get up to 10. We didn't see many go above 10. There are some that go to 10. But the majority of the individuals are much lower in number. I mean, if you're a full-time gill netter and this is all you do, yeah, you're going to have the maximum number of nets out there and working. But there's a lot of people entering this fishery that go off crabbing for a while, and then they come into the gill net fishery and get a couple nets to do that, fill the time until they do something else.
Okay.
So it's just not to penalize the real full-time gill netters. And when we saw this as 1,500 nets in 1 year on that upper category, we talked about that scenario, but it just, it was a tenth of what we thought it could be.
Mr. Bowden, can you shine a little light on that, if you would?
Yeah. Right. I would like to thank Joe and Mike and Jack. We had a lot of data requests, and they were very fast getting for us. I think they wore their jogging shoes because they were back and forth. To answer your question, right now, you have around 2,800 individuals that can buy unlimited number of licenses. So that number could be anything. So, because everybody qualifies. The majority of people in the 6 to 1,200 foot class, a lot of people fell on 3 and less.
Yes.
A lot of people just buy them so they'll have them in case they get limited entry. They may want to do it in the future, which didn't really work very well for the crab pot people who bought theirs, so they would have them. But, we had a lot of discussion on this, and this was a consensus between all of us. Some of us wanted to be stricter. Some people wanted a little more lax. Two of us from Nation Shore, Sam Swift, myself, was on there, and between the two of us, we could buy one license, and we'd be all right, because that's all we use, is 5 apiece. And I think 7 or less is pretty well the norm. And then you have a little spike around 9 and 10. You'll not have to, at any rate, you're cutting the amount of people who are available to buy into half.
And if I remember correctly, a lot of people, they'll get more nets, and they won't set them all. Sometimes they'll have them in different areas on different boats. So, they don't have to take the net from one area to another area. So they can have, multiple nets depending on where they want to fish. If they get 10 nets, they may only put 5 out. And the other 5 are sitting in another area waiting for that area to...
Would they also have, Mr. Bowden, I guess, is the question. Would you have some nets that are a certain mesh size and then other nets that are different mesh size?
We're in a little different situation on seaside because we have a lot of marine mammal laws and turtle laws. Me, I'll give you as an example. I have 7 sets of license. I keep 5 on my 40-foot boat and 2 on my 21-foot. I never fished both boats at one time. Mm-hmm. If I could be a Catholic saint being in 2 places at one time. But... there's other people in that same situation.
Right.
So, I think, this is something we could have had a number much lower years ago, and people, you wouldn't have as much squabbling over as you would now. I suggested to the Waterman Group years ago we needed to do something before it got out of hand. And it kind of got out of hand, but then it come on back down, and it was basically in the norm. It's nothing down a little bit.
Now, on the Rappahannock, what we might do is if you're fishing for rockfish in one area, you'll have a larger mesh, and then if it's perch in the other, you'll have a smaller mesh. So.
You have a lot of people, for example, one boy at home that was on the committee has 2 reels on the boat, which is a very common occurrence in North Carolina, but not in Virginia. Well, he may have small nets for spot on there, and he may have bigger nets for large croakers. For example, when he runs out and it turns out there's croakers there, he has to have flags put on those. That's why he gets the little ones back or whatever.
Further questions, comments? Mr. Robbins.
Thank you. Just one follow-up question. Joe, I think on one of your slides you had up there a restriction that non-resident Class A licenses, the transfer of those would be limited to non-residents. And I'll just ask, is that necessary from a legal standpoint? Have we gotten a legal... Any legal guidance on that from our council, or what can you comment on?
We already have this precedent set with the charter boat fleet where we have resident and non-resident transfers, so this is not without precedent.
Further comments? Matters before the commission.
Move to request public hearing go forward.
Motion made by Mr. Bowden, second by Mr. Schick. Further discussion? All in favor of the motion, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All opposed? Motion carries unanimously. Thank you.